Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. He's Mark Potash. Welcome to House Intrigue, the Chicago Bears podcast. We're Potsy. On this episode, we will talk about what the Bears did in the first couple hours of free agency, what they have left to do, and what the NFC North is shaping up to look like. All of that and more coming up on Hallis Intrigue. Potsy, as we sit here right now, it is 7 p.m. on a Monday. There has been about 8 hours of legal tampering going on, and the Bears have three acquisitions. They picked up weak side linebacker Tremaine Edmonds, who came from the Bills as a two-time Pro Bowler. They got TJ Edwards, who was the Eagles' middle linebacker, and they landed Titans guard Nate Davis. What grabs you about that? Is there a headline among the three?
Well, I think the biggest take is that I thought the Bears, if they were going to ever splurge, it would be on the offensive and defensive line, and they really didn't do that. They didn't go after Orlando Brown or haven't yet, and missed out at least on one of the tackles. So that was probably the surprise. But again, you know, they also have the draft to worry about, and that's good. I think that's going to be an interesting thing, not to ignore the guys they signed. But if you think you have Jalen Carter, you have a shot at Jalen Carter, and they may have already written Jalen Carter off for all I know. But if you think you can get him, do you really? Can you really sign a guy who's going to be a lock starter at three technique? I mean, you kind of can't. If you're going to draft Peter Skoronski or who is it, Paris Johnson?
Paris Johnson from Ohio State.
If you're going to draft one of those guys as a plug and play tackle or guard, can you really sign Orlando Brown or one of the you know top offensive linemen? So it's an interesting dance, and for a guy like Poles who's been very cautious, I think at the very beginning, you know, they're so micro, everything is just watched from the minute. It was like, there was like this big disappointment, like the first hour, what are the Bears not doing? And I think this is a very calculated, disciplined approach, because as excited as we get over free agency, I know everybody says it. It can't be that big a deal. You just can't allow it to be. And they didn't get nobody, and they got two players. They got an offensive line starter. Not sure where, if that will be if that's in place of Cody Whitehair or not. But they got an offensive line starter and two defensive starters. So the only question is, did they get bang for their buck? And a lot of that has to do with how other players on the defense perform. And some of those players are probably not on the team yet.
And as you and I sit here right now, and this may be different by the time it reaches your ears, but Orlando Brown is still available. Dremont Jones, the Broncos three technique, is still available. Potsy, I'd argue to you that the Bears defensive line and offensive line are so bad that they probably could afford to double up. I don't know whether they could double up and pay somebody $120 million in the case of Orlando Brown.
Well, that's the problem.
You
definitely need help. But I mean, like I said, you can't sign one guy who expects to start and then sign and then pick up a draft pick who doubles him, you know, at the same position. I mean, you know, they know more about it than I do. But I'm just pointing out that I think they have to with still a top 10 pick, they still have to consider the draft. As likely getting, I mean, I think they need week one starters. I think that goes into their thinking. And I think maybe that's why if people are disappointed, they didn't just jump right in. I think Poles has been pretty good about being real, being aggressive, but also not wanting to overplay his hand with all the cap.
And if you're a Bears fan who has spent literally the last year believing that losing was more important than winning because it would help you in the upcoming offseason, whether it's because of the draft or because you've got a lot of cap space, I think you were probably lining yourself up for disappointment. I don't know what they could have done today that could have lived up to a year's worth of expectations. Tremaine Edmonds, I find really interesting, though. 4 years, $72 million, about 50 of it is guaranteed. Potsy, that's a lot of money. And
it's a lot of money for no ball production.
That's exactly where I'm going. And that is what I wrote about in the Sun-Times. And that is up right now if you want to go find it online or on your phone. But when Roquan Smith got traded, Matt Eberflus 2 days later said, We need ball production at that position. Now they've gone and given $72 million to somebody who plays that position and doesn't have the ball production that Roquan had, much less the ball production.
It's $2 million less, Pat. They're giving away. It's $2 million less a year. I'm not criticizing the signing. I'm criticizing the rationalization and the explanation. I mean, you can't, it's hard to argue ball production for a guy who wants $20 million a year. And not only a guy, I mean, this was a team leader. If you saw the way that team kind of reacted once he was gone, you know that I think they realized that Roquan was a bigger factor in this team than they thought. And so you can't say that and then give a guy 18. If they would have signed a guy for 12 or something, that's one thing. You know, that's different. But they signed a guy just for 18 who had even less across the board. You look at tackles, sacks, interceptions, overall takeaways, whatever. He's a lesser version statistically and probably otherwise than Roquan Smith. So that's fine. If that's, they just didn't like Roquan, I guess, and didn't think, and they think this guy's worth. The other thing I heard was, I think it was Albert Breer from, and I think he's NFL Network.
Sports Illustrated.
That scheme fit is the big difference. And, and I totally don't understand that, because Roquan, for a guy who only played 8 games in a scheme that supposedly is not a good fit for him, pretty productive. He was on a pace for, like, you know, 4 interceptions, 5 sacks. I mean, 160 something tackles. I mean, my point is he was really pretty productive in a scheme that supposedly people who know people are arguing was not a perfect fit for him. So if he was that good in 8 games without any, with missing the first 3 weeks of training camp and no preseason and just jumping right in there with a bad supporting cast and that productive, wouldn't you think he'd be even better once he got more familiar with your system or your scheme or whatever? My point is, if they like one guy better than the other, I have no problem with that. Just don't give me bad rationalizations, bad explanations, because the scheme fit does not fly just based on Roquan's production.
Yeah, I think you could argue that Eberflus might prefer a bigger player at weak side linebacker, that's a different argument. Yeah, whenever anybody badmouths Roquan Smith's ball production, I like to remind them that, you know, the Bears finished with 3 wins last year. They would have finished with 2 wins last year if Roquan Smith hadn't intercepted a pass in the final minutes of a game against the Texans and set up the game winner. Here's what I find interesting about Edmonds beyond the Roquan stuff, though. You know, I think, like you said, and like I wrote, it is not debatable that Roquan is more productive with the ball in getting the ball than Edmonds. But Edmonds doesn't turn 25 until May, Potsy. He's 13 months younger than Roquan Smith is. And, you know, if you believe in some of this, do you know what the relative athletic score is, Potsy?
No.
It's a way to measure athleticism.
And I know 13 months is not a big difference between two players, 26 and 25. Okay. I know that.
All right.
Well, you're talking about a 30-year-old guy. It's like, who's the defensive lineman? Is it Hargrave?
Yeah. One of them. Hargrave was 31.
One of them's 30 or 31. One of them's 20. Well, if you want to win right now, which the 49ers do, I get them taking a chance in the 30 and the Bears not.
Right.
But 30 and 26 or whatever is a much bigger difference than 20. Roquan's a young guy. He's going to be around for a long time. That's not the reason. No offense. Sorry, Pat. That's not the reason you take one over the other for 13 months. Short NFL career, you don't do that.
Okay. Can I finish my sentence, Potsy?
Yes, you can.
Okay. This relative athletic score thing essentially measures how athletic you are. And when he came out of Virginia Tech, he got a score that made him 48th out of almost 1,800 linebackers who had come out of the draft in the previous 31 years. This is a guy whose athleticism is rare. His size is rare. 6'5", 260 at that position doesn't exist very many places. Maybe the argument for the Bears is you're betting that his production catches up with those things rather than looking back and trying to say he was more productive than Roquan was.
Do the Bills have access to relative athletic, whatever that thing is?
Yes, they do.
Or only the Bears do?
Everybody does.
Everybody. Okay. Well, then, who's been more astute? Who do you think who's been pretty astute about, you know, about the athletes and players over like the last 5 years? I think the Bills have been pretty good, right? So they made a judgment. Now, maybe they were in such a bind, I don't know, with all the contracts that they just could not keep this guy. But my point is, if the upside is that big, again, you've pointed out many times, guys like this don't, guys that good who are that good in general don't get the free agency. But anyway, no. I'm being argumentative, and I apologize for that. But
no, never apologize.
But I'm being skeptical, and also you don't know for both these guys, Edwards and Edmonds. And I'm asked this. I'm not sure how to phrase it, but are they the rising tide in their defenses, or are they the boats that were lifted by the rising tide? You know what I'm saying?
That's a good question.
Really good defenses. And I think you really have to understand, because a lot of times a guy will be good in a good defense, and sometimes he blossoms, you know? I mean, that was the Purnell McPhee theory. Remember that? Mm-hmm. You know, he was a bit player in the Ravens defense, and he would blossom, and he didn't really. I mean, he couldn't stay healthy, but but anyway, the point is sometimes guys like these guys, they blossom, but sometimes they don't because they're part of it. So I guess the question is, and that's what I'm not asking that skeptically even. I'm just wondering. I mean, is that I don't even know. I trust Paul's judgment. I mean, I mean, if he thinks this guy is good. So I'm not saying that they made the wrong move, but I am wondering to what extent is a guy, especially Edwards, is he is he just a byproduct of a really good defense? And he'll be in a better Bears defense this year, but not as good as Phillies, I don't think.
He's an interesting study in that, you know, he's the middle linebacker on the NFC champion. You know, he was also playing on a one-year deal, you know, and at this time last year, wasn't getting the attention that he did now. You know, some of the scouting reports you read say that he's not great in coverage. And, you know, obviously in the modern NFL, that's a problem. But, you know, you said it. I mean, the Bills, you know, 2 years ago were the best defense in football, bar none. This year they were top five. The Eagles were top five. They led the league in sacks. You could argue that they were probably the best team. You know, their defense got them pretty far. And if you're taking some of that culture and some of that secret sauce with you when you walk out the door, maybe that helps the Bears. You know, they're not coming. They're not coming from, you know, programs that have been as bad as the Bears have been. Maybe that's helpful. I want to get back to Roquan real quick and then I'll drop it.
Can I just make one real quick point before you do?
Sure, go ahead.
Because to this point, I think Trevathan is a guy who came over from a good defense and I think was better than advertised or as good as advertised in this similar situation. That's an example of somebody who came in and you could have said, yeah, he was a leading tackler, but was it really because of Von Miller or because of all the other good players they had on their defense? And he was, I think, every bit as good or if not better on the Bears. So there are examples of guys who are fit. I guess I'm talking more, I guess Edmonds is a little bit ahead, is a notch above, but more about Edwards as far as being a productive player. But anyway, go ahead about Roquan.
Point taken. With Roquan, is it possible that the X factor in all of this, when we sit there and go, well, it doesn't make sense to consider Edmonds a better player than Roquan. You know, why would they give him this money when they wouldn't give Roquan that? Is it possible that the X factor is that Roquan represented himself, didn't have an agent, and the whole thing was just bizarre and not fruitful as a result?
I don't know if that directly was, but I think that was maybe part of something that they just found distasteful, and for lack of a better, literally letter, lack of a better word, a better way of putting it, that they just, you know, that he just wasn't their guy. I mean, that's the only thing I can think of is that, you know, Roquan has some peculiarities, I guess, or, you know, whatever you want to, quirkiness, whatever. But he always produced. But yeah, maybe he just, I don't know how else to put it. Maybe he just wasn't their kind of guy or their, you know. I even go back to like this is a really small thing and maybe nothing, but to me it is. I'm sensitive to these things. How distant Poles even was when he referred to, we really liked the player. He referred to his best, one of the best players in the NFL, one of the team's best player, the heart and soul of the defense. He always as the player. Like it was just kind of distant to me. And like I just never got the feeling that they were really in love with this guy like everybody else was. And so I think, I guess my point is, I just think, there's no way to really say we don't like them. So they have to come up with a rationalization like scheme fit. They didn't say scheme fit, but I think ball production was theirs, but they have to come. But really, I think what it comes down to is he just wasn't their kind of guy. And the Ravens defense does seem to fit him better, even though the Bears are in nickel all the time. I mean, you know, there's two linebackers on the field in both defenses all the time. there's still something about both defenses, the way they're set up, that I have to admit, one sure seems to fit Roquan as maybe a little bit better, or maybe more better, significantly better. I don't know.
I haven't got, and we'll leave you with this, Potsy. I haven't gotten a chance to talk to you about, at least on with the tape recorder running, I haven't talked to you about your thoughts on Friday's trade when the Bears moved down from 1 to 9. I think you did a good job in your column for the Sunday paper, laying out all the other times that Bears GMs made what fans thought was the perfect trade and how that didn't really work. With all of that as prelude, how do you think Poles did? And more importantly, is it a trade you would have made?
I think it's interesting. It was interesting. The timing was interesting. It was weird because he got enough that you can't really say he didn't get enough. I mean, mm-hmm. I think he got enough, but it was so early in the process that you almost have to think, wow, could he have gotten more? Because there's so much time. There's so much time for other teams. Like the team he traded with hadn't even defined the quarterback they wanted. They just know they're going to get a quarterback. I think you max out on a deal like that when somebody knows they have to get Bryce Young and they are that desperate to get him. So the process didn't play out. We're always going to wonder, could he have gotten more? But he got enough that I think more than enough. Getting a proven player like DJ Moore just really is a clincher. And I think that was for him. I think that determined whether he did that, pull the trigger or not, because he got a player that he couldn't get in free agency, and maybe not the draft. So the other thing is, I don't know how there are two big factors in trading the pick. One is, do you drop below 4 and before Jalen Carter's incident in Georgia arrest? Do you drop below 4 and not get one of the two players who have a great chance to be, really good players? Or what they did is they set themselves up for the future. You know, they have a draft pick next year that they can with their own pick, they can turn into a top 5 pick to get Marvin Harrison Jr., who's supposed to be better than anybody, any player, any individual player in this draft. Who knows if it'll turn out like that, or one of the quarterbacks. So those were their two things. If you're looking just in a vacuum this year, you regret not being able to get Carter or Will Anderson, and they still could get Carter, I guess, as it turns out. But on the other hand, you're better set up for next year. So I guess my take on it is that a deal I would do? Yeah, I would take the bird in hand with what he got out of that, because I think having a wide receiver who, like you pointed out, everybody has pointed out, who did pretty well without really having anything that the Bears don't have. It's not like you're expecting somebody to do better than they did in a lesser offense. I just think that was, I think that was the right move, but I have to admit it was so early in the process. And I think the earliest a number one pick has ever been traded. Relative to the draft, that you're always going to wonder that. But again, what'll solve that is how well he does with the picks. You know, if you get the right guys, it's not really going to matter.
Yeah, DJ Moore would have been the best receiver on the open market. So I think that's helpful to look at it that way.
But the other thing about DJ, he's such a kind of receiver. I always ask questions like when we talk to like the receivers coaches and stuff like that about like, how do guys get open? What's the difference between one guy? You know, what's short area quickness? DJ Moore is a guy who knows how to get open. You know what I'm saying? I watch highlights of him and he gives them what they really don't have. And I know he's not like, he might not even be Stephon Diggs. He's not Justin Jefferson or whatever. Nope, but absolutely I think it's funny. I know I'm getting off on a tangent, but like someone will say, yeah, so-and-so is an upgrade. Well, an upgrade for the Bears is not good, because it doesn't take much to upgrade. You know what I'm saying? Right. You need good. I think DJ Moore is an upgrade and good. I guess that I would make that distinction.
Yeah. And I also look at it kind of like a baseball lineup too, is, you know, I would rather have Darnell Mooney hitting second and Chase Claypool hitting third than Darnell Mooney leading off and Chase Claypool hitting second. You know, everybody kind of falls into maybe their more natural spot rather than having them play up a spot or two in the order.
And the big question is, is Chase Claypool, who I think has a wide receiver's ego, is he okay with a number two spot? I think he sees himself as the number one guy. I think that's one reason why he kind of pushed his way out of Pittsburgh, is because he didn't like the role he was in. Now he's the kind of, I always say, I just feel like From what I saw, I just feel like he's the kind of guy who will Darnell Mooney, you know, will do whatever they tell him to do. But Claypool will be an interesting dynamic. And when since you mentioned that idea of the pecking order, right. He can be really, really productive. But will he be happy being in that role? You know, it's not unusual for a wide receiver to kind of face that dilemma.
He tweeted an hour ago, Potsy, Chase Claypool did, "Someone give Poles the key to the city." So he seems happy with what's going on.
He knows how to say the right things.
He does.
Remember right after that blow up on the sideline, he said, "Well, it's because I want to win," you know, so he knows. You know, that's all part of the act as far as I'm concerned. Not that he's not a genuine guy, but I'm just saying, I just think he's that kind of, he's a wide receiver's wide receiver. He can give you great production, but boy, you got to keep him happy. And that'll be an interesting thing to watch this season, his production and how he handles it and what he wants out of it.
There'll be a lot of interesting stuff to watch, Potsy, both during the season and during the upcoming week or two. I'm sure we will be back talking about it here fairly soon. But until then, you can follow Jason Leisure, who is far afield, and Mark Potash and myself on Twitter. You can check us out on the Sun-Times website or pick up a paper if you live in town. But Potsy, back to the free agent grind. For all we know, something huge is going to happen here in 2 minutes and render all of this irrelevant, but hopefully not.
Something might have already happened while we were talking that we're totally missing and blowing it, Pat. So
I've had my phone in my hand the whole time, Potsy. Okay. I think we're okay.
For you. I can't work like that.
For Mark Potash, I'm Patrick Finley. Thanks so much for listening. We will be back again real soon.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.